Hello and welcome to A Radio Geekly, an hour-long insight into the realm of geekdom. I'm Just Jess, and I will be your guide for the next 60 minutes. So strap yourselves in, beam yourselves up, and blast off with us into another exciting adventure. I'm Just Jess, and I would like to welcome you guys to our second episode. Yay! We had to take a little hiatus from doing this show last month because of the membership drive, but thanks to everybody that called and donated either online or on the phone, and we made a lot of money to help support our community. So thank you so much to everybody, and let's get into meeting all of our in-studio guests. I've got my fellow geeks here, David, Becky, and Jenna.
Welcome to all of you.
Hello.
And how are you guys feeling today?
Oh, yeah. Good.
Dude, I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited for today's show, man.
It's going to be a great one. David?
It's a nice, wet morning.
It is.
It's so Portland.
It's so Portland.
It's like the winter.
It like turned into Portland like in the last 2 weeks. It went from being like summer to and welcome back.
Right.
It's nice. I've missed the rain.
Yeah. It definitely fall, I think, has hit for all of us.
That's cool because that means more TV watching weather. Oh, yeah.
Woohoo!
With pumpkin everything. Yeah. I'm one of those
pumpkin
people.
Pumpkin spice.
I'm one of those people.
You're into the pumpkin spice thing?
Dude, everything, like when it comes down to geekdom, it's like pumpkin spice with Star Trek. Yes. Pumpkin spice with Luke Cage. Yes.
Yes. Oh, my God. What a great show.
Right? We need to get into that.
Yeah, oh, we're going to talk about that stuff, though. Hey.
Yeah, we are, because this episode today is talking about the progressive movement. And some of us were trying to think about what is our definition of progressivism. I kind of went online to find out the official dictionary definition, and it defines progressivism as a philosophy based on the idea of progress, asserting the advancement in science, technology, economic development, and social organization that are vital to improve the human condition. It also favors or advocates progress, change, improvement, or reform, as opposed to wishing to maintain things as they are, especially when it comes to politics, or progression made towards better conditions, employing or advocating more enlightened or liberal ideas, new or experimental methods, etc.
Okay.
Do you guys kind of agree with that definition? How would you define? Let's ask that question. How would each of you kind of define progressivism?
Well, I mean, that's the internet definition, so it must be the definition.
Believe everything on the internet.
Well, for me, I think progressive. But when I think progressive, I think progressive politics, which has those qualities of like forward movement and like social, trying to like improve conditions and things like that. I also think that at its base, it speaks to working within government. And so there is a limitation in that, because you are now confined by working within the system in order to enact change. But I know that's not part of the internet definition. So
no, I like that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like it's important when we talk about, I think, fantasy and sci-fi and things like that, when you have something that is so expansive, right? Like we're talking about the future, we're talking about space and all of these things, and we still work within the framework of like reality as we see it. So that in of itself is a limitation. So I think in that way, that's why progressivism is in that way limited, like it's limited by working within the system, mm-hmm. and by the limitations of our reality,
right?
Or the imagining of said reality.
Yeah.
Well, I like the definition that you read. This is Jenna. Like the idea, that it's about not staying where we are, that it's about forward thinking. I tend to think of it sort of progressivism as, especially in this time, that it's about, it's enlightenment, I don't know, or openness, where it's kind of like my idea is that it's about society constantly becoming more inclusive as we're becoming more open to the idea that like it's okay that people are different from mm-hmm. one another, and that it's about that constant moving forward of the idea that it's constantly okay that things are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I liked how you said it was inclusive, like social inclusivity.
Yeah,
you know, instead of you know, being separated and not having as much diversity, I guess.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. For that term to be something that's embraced rather than like, oh, we're so diverse though,
yeah,
and we're so different. It's like, no, actually, being different is good. And being okay, because you don't want this homogenous kind of mold of this is how society works and this is what we do. And
right, yeah, like a emphasis on xenophobia and an emphasis on reactionary sort of politics. Like that right. would be the opposite.
Yeah, and I think it's also about, especially within like geek culture and how we're presenting progressivism, that it's about presenting things that are different as being the norm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's what progressivism is too. It's not just about like, hey, let's accept people for their differences, but also mm-hmm. to realize that that is normal
mm-hmm.
and that it needs to not be seen as like something that's other, but it's we're all normal.
Right, yeah.
That's
right.
We're all our own default base.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in this kind of discussion, what would you guys say would be kind of either shows or types of media in geek culture that you've experienced that have kind of portrayed this progressive movement?
Do Luke Cage. Can we talk about that?
Can we?
Oh my God, did anybody else binge that so bad?
I only got a chance to watch the first two episodes, but
okay, it's okay. You can do mini binge. I did the first six. So I did mini binge because it was like so intense. Mm-hmm. So good though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I didn't realize also that the Luke Cage character was also in Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is another like
yeah.
I mean, like it's darker for sure, and it takes a look at, you know, themes of retribution and sexual violence and things like that, mm-hmm. but also like has this incredibly strong female character who then meets this incredibly strong like POC male character
yeah.
who then goes on to have an amazing show.
That's so good.
It's so good.
Oh, acting is so good, and just, you know, what to me is progressive about that show, I mean, it's nothing new to have like a show that has like a bunch of POC characters, but what I like about the show is that, well, one, he's a superhero, and how freaking cool is that? You know, but that he's being treated as though it's like totally normal. They don't constantly have to bring up like that
right.
he's other or yep, something.
From like the very beginning, which
yeah.
is cool.
Yeah. And there's no like having to point out that like, wow, almost, what is it, like 99% of the characters are non-white. And that's just totally normal. It's just treated mm-hmm. like this is their normal neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
These are normal people. Like as an Asian American, I was really excited to see the one like Asian old lady on the show being portrayed as still like she's a corrupt, like old kind of Chinatown woman, but she speaks English.
Right.
I was like, oh my gosh, she speaks English. Like that's progressive to me.
Yeah. And it's not with like a heavy like Asian accent
yeah.
or something.
And she's like intelligent,
right.
you know. It's that's what I love about all the characters, that they're so complex, and that is what is like very progressive, and that it's willing, the show is willing to talk about, I think, what a lot of other shows are afraid to touch on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so the fact that they're talking about Black Lives Matter movement, and they're talking about police
yeah.
corruption and police violence, and what does that mean for these communities and how people interact with society.
That's a huge theme, mm-hmm.
yeah,
even within like the center of the show.
It is. It,
like the corruption of politics and stuff.
Yeah.
And even within communities that share like, you know, like I wouldn't even say values, just they're like, you know, they all live in Harlem. They all like are part, like know each other. They grew up together. They have history. And yet there are people who are like, I don't dig what you're doing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Whatever, like, that's corrupt. That's awful.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. And like, I think that's like a simplification of it, but still.
Oh, it's
yeah.
so good.
I can't
stop
so
good. Watch it. If you haven't watched it, watch it.
Oh, this is, it's that time, they're calling this peak television, so it's all to our benefit, but the internet really has redefined how stories can be told, and Netflix is one of those trailblazers.
Oh, yeah.
And all those Marvel crossovers, and
mm-hmm.
they're able to tell the whole story over, you know, ends up being, what, a 10-hour story
mm.
with all kinds of ups and downs and dynamics, and they can do that now, and that's, like when a show comes out and I'm looking at, you know, oh, this show looks good, and I see, oh wait, it's on ABC or some commercial network, and I'm at that point where I don't really want to even try it because I know what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I know, they're going to have the regular arc and then, oh, high, down, love interest, blah. Mm-hmm. And I just I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I see something like, even if it doesn't look terribly interesting, I know that they're going to give me a run for my money on something like Netflix or any of those other online or cable channels like AMC and HBO. It's really beneficial, and I want them to step up their game on the other end, you know, even though it's just like I look at my mother-in-law, and she's watching the network shows, and she loves it, and I realize there is a definite demographic that they're targeted for. Mm. You know, people who watch CBS. I don't know if that's really moving the ball forward when it comes to progressive geekdom, stuff like that, but you know, people like their CSI and their NCIS, and they like that stuff. So, but what I like is what they're doing now, and it really is to the benefit of all of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have any like shows that you were intrigued by just from watching them through like Netflix or anything like that?
The show I'm digging right now, and I know it's been catching fire, is Stranger Things. I don't know if you've done that.
Oh my God, that's another one. Don't
give any spoilers though, because Becky has not.
No, I've only seen the two episodes.
You know, it's one of those things that when I saw a review for it, they actually knocked it, and now that. People actually are watching it. And it's an incredible show. It's a great show. It's in the 80s. It's very progressive, and it's set in a small Indiana town, and it has that nostalgic feel that we're all kind of tuning back for. I think that's part of the charm of television now. Is mm-hmm. all of us 30-year-olds are like, yeah, that's what I like how that makes me feel. You know, that's what mm-hmm. it was like for me mm-hmm. in the 80s. But that show, and it has supernatural elements. It has the Goonies / feel, but done very well and without the cheese. So yeah, you definitely should check that one out. I haven't finished it yet, but
I will.
Oh my God, will you totally finish it?
Yeah. Oh my God, we could talk about this forever.
Right,
exactly. Winona Ryder's so good.
Yeah, which was I have to say, I'm like flip flopped when it comes to Winona Ryder stuff, and it's like sometimes I'm like, ooh, and sometimes I'm like, yeah, you know.
This was totally
It brought me back to like the Edward Scissorhands kind of time for her.
It's so interesting to see her being like the mom,
right?
You know, and she's like a mom of like a 20-year-old. You're like, what you doing, Winona Ryder? But she's so good in the show. But just like to get back to how I think that show is progressive, or like, you know, all the different elements they have. It the girl who's on it, the girl with the superpower. Oh, she is like, you do not mess with that girl. She is like, she's presented as being like complex but intelligent.
Right.
You know, she's like independent but vulnerable. I just really like what Netflix and like is doing, you know, with being able to present people mm-hmm. as real people and not just like a girl with superpowers. You know, it's like,
there's super. Can't wait. Oh my God. Yeah.
I know. Oh my God. I want to give away all the spoilers.
Well, I know.
No, that's it.
Everybody dies and lives at the end.
They either die or they live, but you
the
can't
show
tell.
Ends. That's how it is.
Have y'all watched Sense8 at all?
No.
Sense8 was done by the two folks that came up with the Matrix series.
Okay.
The Wachowskis. So the series, it centers on folks who are trans, who are queer, who are female, like are POC, and have personalities that intersect with that, but also it changes a really cool paradigm of like how people, you know, connect with one another. They have this like the psychic connection piece, and it is also on Netflix, but it also explores, you know, that as a metaphor between, you know, like how we're interconnected, how our experiences, because they sense each other's, you know, experiences through the psychic connection.
Hmm.
But as such, like, you know, there's somebody who could be, you know, this white dude who's now suddenly feeling all the feelings of this, like, you know, kick butt, like, trans character who's just like a mega hacker, but also can like shoot guns and stuff. So like they're feeling all of these different feelings. It's actually a really cool exploration of, I think, intersectionality, which makes it progressive in that way. Like the themes of science fiction, how mm-hmm. they get there, you know, all the backstory and history that comes from, you know, like I think a more grounded, like traditional sci-fi background. Mm-hmm. But then you have this element of people who are exploring it who are, you know, not necessarily the demographics that always, always, always get representation.
Yeah.
It is a great show.
Okay. What is it called again?
Sense8.
Sense8.
Yeah, it's spelled Sense and then the number 8.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, it's pretty twee in that way, but I think it's awesome in that. Yeah. Also, Black Mirror is coming out soon, too. There's a new season of that. And while that doesn't, you know, explore identity issues as much, it definitely takes a look at things like technocracy and, you know, the power of technology in how our political systems change, how our social dynamics change. It is, that show in of itself is...
I mean, that's such like a heart of the geek idea. Yeah. It's like, how does technology like affect how our society interacts with each other? Mm-hmm. And it can either be this incredibly progressive thing or this really terrifying Matrix world.
Right, which is sort of the way that Black Mirror goes. But then you have like, we can't ignore this important piece, the original series... The original television series that takes a look at how technology intrinsically changes society. Exactly. What is it called?
There's I think it's like a gosh, let's think about it. Could it be? Yes, Star Trek, the best show ever, ever, ever.
So we've got a you know, I was trying to give Jenna a little background ambient music there.
Okay. Even if it was from
a different sci-fi.
It's cool.
It's all aliens.
Maybe I'm just crazy. I just probably want some Reese's Pieces. That's probably what it is. But yeah, Jenna's got a piece that she recorded with a couple of other folks from our collective talking about the progressive nature in Star Trek and kind of how the traditional sci-fi actually bended some of the traditional roles and characters and stuff.
We tried to get into the complexity of it.
Yeah, so while we're taking a listen to that, I just want to let listeners know you're tuned into a Radio Geekly here. Our monthly geek show is going to be on the first Friday.
That's right.
Of every month. And you can log on to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Radio Geekly, all one word, and watch our live stream now. And we're going to be taking some listener calls and reading from the mailbag later on in the show. So if you have any comments, questions, or thoughts, you can email us aradiogeekly@kboo.fm.
Also, like our stuff.
And
follow us on Twitter and do those things. And then listen to this and then have ideas and share them with us.
So here we go. Progressive Star Trek.
For this segment of Radio Geekly, we're going to be talking about Star Trek! Woohoo!
Yay, Star Trek!
As well as progressive representations. So,
Or the lack thereof,
yes.
That's right.
I'm Tabitha Teo, and I'm joined by...
Glitz Shimmersteed.
And Jenna.
Woohoo! So I'll start off with my Star Trek experience. I was actually never really a huge Star Trek fan until 2012.
What?
I know. I am a huge fan of the reimagining of Battlestar Galactica, and my friend Bart was like, well, if you really like BSG, then you totally need to watch DS9, because Ronald D. Moore was the developer for BSG, and then he moved over to DS9, and I should watch it. And then I did, and it was amazing.
So I can remember growing up and watching Star Trek with my dad, because he's a huge Trekkie, like... He even had the figurines and stuff on display in his office at work.
So your dad is cool.
My dad's awesome. And so I can remember watching the show with him a lot growing up. And then I actually recently tried to start rewatching it, like maybe a few months ago. And
what
I actually
are you starting with?
I was starting with the, I think it was Deep Space Nine. Mm. And then I actually got really sad and had to turn it off because of the not so progressive stuff that I saw in it. Because that's the thing I do with media is I'll watch it. And if it doesn't pass my feminist test, then usually I'll turn it off. So that's kind of my experience with it. I haven't watched the shows in a while, but it is like great nostalgia that I feel for the show.
My Trek is Next Generation. I watched it growing up. I think I watched a little bit of the original series. And then I remember when DS9 came out, like I did watch that. But I don't know, it kind of lost interest after a while in DS9. But I think it was because Voyager came out and I was all about the Janeway. I did boycott Enterprise when it came out, even though I'm a huge like Star Trek nerd. I was just like,
oh yeah, Enterprise is terrible.
Oh my God. Yeah. Whether or not it's progressive or not, I want to say that it is just not progressive in the sense that it was a terrible show and it was a step back for Star Trek, but whatever.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, so I've consistently watched the shows as they were on. I am too young for the original series. I will say that. So there you go.
I think all of us are too young for the original.
Yeah. Even though that show was one of, you know, the heart of the progressive nature of the show.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it for a little bit for maybe who our radio listeners, you know, aren't completely familiar with the original series. So the original series, you know, premiered in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And for the time, it was progressive in the sense that, like, oh my gosh, there was a woman.
A black female crew member that was not a servant. And
the same with Sulu, you know, and mm-hmm. I think a lot of times these days we don't maybe think about Chekhov, but, you know, this was in the height of the Cold War. And exactly. So to have like this Russian character.
Yeah. Even though the actor is not Russian and he's like faking a Russian accent. But it's the same with Scotty. He's not a Scotsman. But
yeah. And even at that time, you know, it's like it's not the same as is now. I think our mm-hmm. idea of whiteness has evolved since like the 1960s or it's changed. I don't want to call it evolving. I want to say it like it's overtaking and being crazy. But that's a whole nother show where we can get into that. But, you know, so you had like a Scotsman. You mm-hmm. had somebody who was Russian. You had this Asian, this kind of pan-Asian pilot. And, mm-hmm. you know, so there were things that for now, yeah, it doesn't seem progressive. But to me, Star Trek is always this like it's progressive for its time. But at the same time, there are things like.
There's always room for improvement.
Well, there always, yeah, like how come Kirk always has to make out with every freaking alien?
Yeah.
Why is every alien a woman who's like ridiculously beautiful?
Yeah, yeah.
So, Glitz, what is, in your opinion, like what is progressive about Star Trek?
A lot of the stuff that I was looking at specifically is sort of like non-binary or trans-coded characters, because I'm trans and non-binary. So that's what I'm going to be looking for just out of like personal interest and what I know the best. So Star Trek kind of has this long history of sort of like at least having characters that are coded that way, and that having it at all is really progressive. They usually don't do the best job of how they handle it, and I see that as like maybe the writers. And we were actually, after we had watched an episode, my partner and I were looking up info on the writer, and it said that like one of them that was working for the show, I'm not going to name drop, was said to be pretty racist and homophobic. Mm. And then that can work its way in of how you see these like trans and non-binary characters. But still, having even the conversation come up is really important, and I really respect it for doing that.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point about, you know, the writers and what is Star Trek. You know, Star Trek is a concept by Gene Roddenberry, who mm-hmm. it seems like when you kind of read about what his idea of Star Trek was, it was actually way more progressive than the show ended up being, right? Like,
yeah.
Gene Roddenberry, you know, one kind of famous story about him is that he had announced that there was going to be a gay character on Next Generation, and then mm-hmm. he died the next year, so that character really didn't come to fruition. Glitz, you had mentioned, you know, characters that you don't really see, like, the non-binary. Well, I guess there are a few. So, like, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So there's the Trill, which is, like, it's an alien-type species in Star Trek that they transfer. They're like a parasitic slug that transfers bodies every once in a while once their human body is
like
aged too much.
And,
yeah. So there's a character, Dax, on Deep Space Nine that gets transferred. Like, their previous incarnation was a man and now they're a woman. But the thing that I noticed the first time that Dax is on screen, she's being hit on. And I think that that's a really telling way to introduce your character is like, this is a sexual object that's like there for the consumption of men. And actually, like, she's trying to be very polite and say no, like firmly but politely. And the person asking her out doesn't take the no, like keeps pushing and keeps being like, no, but you should really come back to Matt Quarters. And that was kind of like squicky and not so great.
And yeah, it's, if the symbiote was still in her mail, would he be getting that much tension and that much harassment? You kind of wonder.
Yeah. There was also, like, one of the first lines that Captain, like, Sisko says is, like, have you told him? Meaning, like, have you told him what your previous gender was? Which is pretty classic, like, trans question that folks will just ask you is, like, have you told that person? Like, you're being deceptive right off the bat. And, like, well, this is going to take some getting used to, Sisko says. It's, like, getting used to. Like, there's a person in front of you. What's there to be used to? She's, like, a lady.
I like that you call it a parasitic slug. One thing I do find interesting about the Dax is that it's created some of the more, what I think, kind of interesting episodes that are the ones that have to deal with gender and sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. Because you have that episode on DS9 and Tabitha's our super DS9 nerd, so maybe she can remember what episode this is, where you have Dax seeing her ex. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's like her ex-spouse.
Her wife from her previous life. That rhymed. Unintentionally. They meet up again and they actually kiss.
Wait, they kiss?
They do kiss, but then it's like a really quick fade out. Uh-huh. So the kiss is only on screen for like...
So is that like the only like same-sex kiss that you see?
I kind of wonder...
On Star Trek? I feel like...
That, well, it also kind of makes me think of Odo a little bit. So there's another Odo centered episode where he's a changeling and
on DS9.
Yeah. And he meets another changeling, and changelings are like this alien species that can, like, as the name implies, they can shapeshift. They're like in their natural state, they're like this yellow goldenish goo. But the special thing about changelings is that when they're in their liquid form, they can actually like combine together and like share memories and thoughts. And it's also the way that like changelings have sex. And there's an episode where Odo meets another like male changeling. And that's the okay, that's another issue. Sorry, too many things at once. And Odo like melds with this other male changeling, and it's like it's never mentioned, but it's like, is that gay sex?
Is
that
awesome.
A homosexual sex scene? But the thing that I think is really interesting about changelings is they're an alien species that can take on like many different shapes and forms, but the species they're like. Like, Odo's coded male, and then, like, meet a coded female changeling. But, like, they're an alien species that can, like, morph and change. So why do they, like, have gendered appearances?
Because network executives, like, binaries, that's why.
Yeah. It's easier if you can identify a male or a woman. Nothing in between. But it's also the same thing with Trills. They're like a symbiotic alien slug. And like they've lived, I don't know how long the slugs can live, but I would think their ideas of gender would be pretty fluid because like they've been in both like male bodies, they've been in female bodies. And if network executives weren't so shy, I would hope that they would address the fact that maybe the Trill symbiote has been in some non-binary bodies. But even in like being a male body or like a female body, I would think would change like at least the Trill's idea of gender and gender fluidity. It's like the episode The Outcast.
Which one's this on? Next Generation?
This is a TNG episode, yeah.
Oh, is this the one where, what's his name?
Riker.
Riker, yeah. Falls in love.
I rewatched that one last night.
Yeah, I sadly did not get a chance to rewatch it. And it is definitely one of those episodes. And it originally was supposed to be a metaphor for homosexuality and the treatment of homosexuals. But I was watching this one online reviewer I really like. His website's called SF Debris. You guys should totally check out his stuff. But I watched his review of The Outcast, and he applauds like their efforts in trying to address homosexuality. But then there's a scene when like Riker's trying to describe what men like in females, but it never really, the issue never comes up like, sometimes men aren't looking at women. Sometimes men are looking at other men. Or maybe women want to look at other women. And it does also kind of bother me how when Riker is in the shuttle with the alien, about we don't use him or her. We use a different pronoun. I mean, she doesn't say pronoun, but we use a different term. But I don't think there is a translation in your word. And
it's called they.
Yeah, I don't know why that was so hard. And then
I know.
Come on, but then again, you know, I'm always remembering, like, this is the 80s. Like, I just got to kind of be happy that this was really progressive for the time, like, that they were talking about this at all. I mean, because essentially that episode, not only are they talking about, you know, I mean, it's not really actually about gender. It's supposed to be addressing this idea of homosexuality.
Yeah.
And can you, like, essentially pray the gay away?
Yeah.
And the answer was, like, no. No, you can't. And that's what it was attempting to address, wasn't it?
But at the end of the episode, she I'm calling her she, even though she's supposed to be gender neutral. It's played
I mean, also that character does say that they have female feelings.
Oh, and that's right.
They self-identify as a woman. So I think that's maybe why people refer to her as she is. If that person was able to choose, like, they definitely say that in the episode.
But... Okay. I forgot about that. Yeah,
that's right. I forgot about that, too. Thank you.
And then, you know, so it's like the thing that a lot of people had a problem with that episode was they're like, yay, you're addressing something progressive. But then it does the Star Trek thing where then it takes a step back or whatever, or it has a controversial ending because eventually the gender neutral character, right? She's like a Janai or whatever. I forget what her name is. Somehow I remember the alien, but she ends up going through the therapy.
Yeah.
You know, like Riker's not able to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, I mean, people were really critical about that at the time. Now when I look back, I'm like, wow, what a statement. What a statement to say that, like, the reality is that this character was existing within a culture that was not supporting them in any sort of way. And so what was they had to make a choice between, like, hey, how do I choose to leave my entire culture? I have to leave my entire people. I have to actually freaking leave my planet. And I think it presented, like, what a difficult, complex situation that was. And so when I look back, I'm like, well, maybe that was the kind of better choice for the ending, where you're presenting something complex and not something so easy, like, hey, look, it's all wrapped in a bow. And, of course, once again, Riker saves the day and gets to sleep with whoever he wants to because he's that character. He always gets
because he's
gets
the Kirk of TNG.
He's the Kirk of TNG.
I'm really hoping that the new Star Trek series, because there's a new series. I can't remember when it premieres, but it premieres in 2017. I'm very excited.
What I would like to see is the next series being the progressive Star Trek that Gene Roddenberry wanted. Right? Like, one of my favorite things is on the pilot for Next Generation. You see this one guy for like a split second. You see
him in his skirt.
Yeah, you see a man wearing the go-go dress.
Yeah,
that they wore in the original Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, you never see it again after the pilot. And so all you can think is like, oh, this was something that they originally wanted. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, like, the executives were like, why is there a man in a dress? And then they cut it.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that these sorts of concepts will come into the new Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there were so many things. Like, I remember reading this article once with, what's her name? I just know her as Janeway. I don't even know her real
name. Kate Mulgrew.
No, she's Janeway. She's just Janeway for the rest of it. Even when she's on Orange is the New Black, I'm like, oh, what's Janeway doing? Janeway's in jail.
Oh, I didn't know she was on Orange is the New
Black. Oh, my God.
She totally is.
She plays a character named Red.
She's so good.
Yeah. Right? So glitch, you watch it. Right? And, like, you want to, like, hug her all the time and
you're
be, like...
You're just, like, so confused, too, because you're like, Janeway, what happened? How did you turn into this person now? I'm a little scared of you. Like, I was on your team, and now I'm kind of questioning if I should step back.
Well, this is just what I think what happens when you end up getting stuck in the Delta Quadrant for, like, a few decades. You obviously become a little bit bitter. You become a little bit hard. You
make a little angry.
Break a few laws. Get in jail.
Oh, God.
Okay, but this is, like, a whole tangent about Kate Mulgrew. Sorry, what was I talking about? Oh, Kate Mulgrew had, in an interview from, like, 2001 or so, she had said that, she said, we really had wished that we could have gotten a gay character onto the show.
Oh.
And apparently it just didn't happen. So it's like, you know, even people within the Star Trek family, like, they want it. So I'm hoping, like, finally they can do all these things.
Network executives.
I know. I feel like it can exist in our time, right?
And yeah, about time.
To bring this all back home, we've had this whole discussion. So is Star Trek in general, is it progressive?
Definitely lots of room to go further. But for mainstream media, I definitely think they have characters and tackle issues that other TV shows may not address. And I think because it is a science fiction, it might be a little easier to sort of brush it off because it's science fiction. It's supposed to be in the future. Bah. And it's easier to write it off. But Star Trek has endured for like 50 years. It might be easy to brush off, but people still pay attention to it. So even if done subversively, you could get in like an important social message in there.
What's your opinion?
I would put it somewhere in the middle. I wouldn't necessarily call it progressive, but I'm not going to say that it hasn't done anything or doesn't have deeper things to say in it. I guess my one sticking point that I'm thinking of in my brain is like, is it really pushing something forward to be telling these stories that for those that find life experiences in it problematic, that's not doing a whole lot for you. So like for me, when I'm thinking of the trans characters and watching them and going, but that's not how it is. And you're doing all these things that are hurtful and really happen in my life. And that's the story you're including, not one that shows me in a positive way or gets people thinking about you in a positive way. I would not say that that's pushing things forward then. But they do go there where other shows completely are just like hands off. So I'm not going to say that they're not doing anything. So yeah, I would say that they're in the middle for me. And that I do hope that they continue to improve and really push it further, but in a positive way, rather than these sort of like complex and maybe sort of negative ways oftentimes.
Yeah, I feel kind of like the same way where it's hard for me to, like, I want to say, oh yeah, Star Trek is so progressive. But when I really think about it, it's more that it's progressive in context, that compared to a lot of other television shows, yes, it pushes the envelopes in many ways and they do it really subtly. So oftentimes it's hard to see it as progressive. And they do these things that you're talking about, you know, where it's just like, wait a minute. And you just see these really negative portrayals of things that you think or that you think, they would think about that to not make those types of statements. So I think it's progressive-ish in nature. I think that they want to appear progressive. I think they've taken a step back with the current movies because they didn't push the envelope with the current movies. Yeah, so I don't know if we necessarily have like a conclusion in answering like whether or not it's progressive, but I think what I hear is everyone is very hopeful that we recognize what they tried to do, what they've been trying to do, and that we love you, Gene Roddenberry. We want your vision. We want your vision to happen.
A utopic human society. And then maybe someday in the real world, we'll have a utopic human society.
Okay, but real quick, the one thing I don't want to have to come true from Star Trek is that Star Trek, their future only happens because of the catastrophic World War III.
That's true,
what makes the whole thing possible. So in that sense, I hope that the writers can figure out a progressive way for us to not have to all kill each other in order to have this amazingly.
Yeah.
Like, why do we have to kill each other just so that we can all get along?
So you've been listening to Star Trek Talk on Radio Geekly with Tabitha Teo,
Glitz Shimmersteed,
and Jenna.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Well.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, we had some opinions there.
Yeah, you did. And I hear that there were more, but.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, we had a whole, like, I think it was like an hour something plus discussion. We went into Ferengi. We went into all the different shows. I know I did some Scott Bakula yelling because I can't talk about Star Trek without yelling at Scott Bakula. Ruin the franchise.
Controversy.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that conversation. Just because, you know, Gene Roddenberry, when we think of him, we tend to think of how he tried to create this universe that wasn't existing all the time. You know, it was really progressive, the original series was. But then, you know, when I've been kind of watching, you know, God bless the Netflix. I've been watching all of the, you know, old shows. And, you know, in our time, we're so much more progressive compared to, say, like the 80s when Next Generation, you know, came out. Right, and that was like my first show. And when watching it now, I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, God, that's so sexist. Oh, that's so misogynistic. Oh, that's so homophobic. But then when I
watch it compared to other shows that were on at the same time, like, oh yeah, compared to say like Columbo, was really, really progressive, you know? So it's always about, for me, it's about having to keep it in context.
Right. Yeah. If you guys are just tuning in, you're listening to Radio Geekly here on KBOO Portland. We're talking about the progressive movement in geek culture. And we just heard an awesome piece about Star Trek and its progressivism in there. And you can stream us online. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Geekly. We're doing some live streaming. Or if you have some info, thoughts, comments, questions, you can email us aradiogeekly@kboo.fm or call us at 503-231-8187, and we will take your calls and listen to your lovely thoughts and opinions on this topic.
Yeah. So I know that you had to cut this out due to time, but the Ferengi present interesting, I think, discourse on, you know, power dynamics and gender expression and things like that. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about what y'all talked about in that.
I know, maybe we'll have to bring it out some kind of like special online thing, because I feel like
brief, but if you had 30 seconds to describe what you just talked about.
It's a really brief, if you don't really know who the Ferengi are, well, so the Ferengi are this alien species, you know, and what's really interesting that they're very, you know, male dominated in terms of the power structure, and the women are always naked, apparently, and the women are not allowed to own anything. And so you see on Deep Space Nine, they try to tackle this topic where you have one of the main characters of Ferengi, and his mother decides that she's going to wear clothes. And her sons are really ashamed of this because she's not acting like a normal woman. So, you know, it's very interesting to watch this woman try to become her own independent person. And she eventually helps run the government and like runs this really successful business, but having to be very subversive about it.
Right.
And just like her wearing clothes is the statement that she's making. It's a, you know, it's a very kind of extreme tackling of this topic of gender.
I find that a lot of not specifically in Star Trek, but in other series as well, like Babylon 5, for example, they take a look at like I think that a lot of these series they have a humanoid perspective. Every like alien race, with the exception of, you know, like some of them, like the Drazi or whatever, like they're mostly humanoids, and then they have to take a look at like these human concerns within the reimagining of their bodies and things like that. And so like the Ferengi are a classic case of that, where you know, societally they have a different treatment of the gendered like groups in their society, and then have like a really extreme sort of like, okay, so here's the relief to, you know, like how we as humans relate to one another. Here's the relief to that. Like you're like somebody, like we've taken misogyny totally far, and then like here, you know, how does somebody subvert that, and how do we talk about progressiveness in that way? But usually, like I don't think that that sort of discussion is so deep in a lot of series. Like I mentioned Babylon 5, Minbari culture, for example, like those folks were extremely gendered, but there was one specific female character who was the one of the main characters. What was her name? Like a Dylan or something. And she had like totally different physical characteristics. Was expected to be like the mediator. Like was very diplomatic in the series, where that wasn't the case for all of that race. You know?
Interesting.
Yeah. So like usually it's the same. Same concerns, different bodies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it makes me think of another show, Firefly. I don't know if you guys are Firefly fans.
Yeah, like I've watched it maybe 100 times. I don't know.
But to talk about the gender roles and how some of them were kind of bending in sort of a slight, subtle, more subtle way, I guess, with, I think, just think about the character of Kaylee, how she's this cutesy woman, but then she also is very strong and works with her hands, and she's a very dependent.
Well,
She's the engineer. So if something goes wrong with Serenity, then it's like, Kaylee, fix it, please, you know? And so just seeing how, like, she has that strong sensibility of like, yeah, I'm dependent to the rest of the crew to be here and be able to like fix the ship. But then you look at others, other characters like Zoe, where she can be on the ship, but then also knows when there's a problem outside, like, I need to go save the world. She's like, all right, peace out. I'm going to go grab my gun and, you know, go like kick some butt. And so just kind of seeing how these women were portrayed in a way that I guess the characters themselves were not defined by gender.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
I thought it was a cool exploration of femme identity. Absolutely. Yeah. Like as you know, somebody who presents as femme, right? Like having this interesting interplay of like skill sets, of like abilities, and, you know, like willingness to step outside of this presentation.
Right.
I thought was really cool. And yeah. I think it did it for all of I think it's three main characters who are on the ship who are, well, no, four, because River, right? So it's River, Kaylee,
Zoe, Mal.
And Mal.
Or Mal no. is, oh, no, no, female, no, it's
the female
about.
Character. Yeah, who was the ambassador person?
Inara.
Don't give me, I've Inara. Never Inara. Watched Firefly.
Oh, my, whoa.
I know, I'm sorry.
I feel like there's,
it's okay, it's okay. Now you both have something to watch on Netflix.
Right, we have work to do.
The next binge.
When you finish your discussion with the Star Trek, you said something, I mean, is it progressive? And there are some dissenting opinions, but I think what you said, Jenna, saying how it's within context, and really, like, when I think of all the stuff, like the books and everything I read, like I read, you know, sci-fi fiction from the 50s and and it, they're talking about the future, but there's always those horrible misogynistic things like this is, but you got to judge it through that lens of that the 50s or, you know, or the late 80s for Star Trek and, you know, 60s, whatever. So is it really fair to say something isn't progressive when we're looking at it now, you know, in 2016, when stuff has, you know, it has shifted a lot and you know, a great deal in many good ways. So is it really fair to judge something as not being progressive now, which, you know, arguably probably isn't progressive now, but it was. So it's still progressive. Just we can't judge it by what we have now.
Right.
Yeah, that context is really important. And also, I think that there's another issue that brings up is, you know, when we have works like these that are, I mean, like we're not perfect. We're never going to be perfect. Humans aren't perfect. You're going to have these things as canon, who like they then are the works by which we judge the progressiveness and worthiness of other future works. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the trickiness kind of lies. Like, so then you have this representation of like character races or whatever, but they still act in a misogynistic way, then that's canon. That's what influences future creation in that way. And so I think it's just that tricky line. It's not simply just context.
You see things progressing within the canon, even within Star Trek, you know, you see say like the Klingons, you know, the Klingons in the original series, you never would have saw a female Klingon in the original series. But then once you get to kind of like DS9 and Voyager, you see women, I mean, sure, they're still very much presented as like these very sexualized characters, but they're also portrayed as being leaders. You see like characters like B'Elanna on Voyager, and then you just see that you learn more about the Klingons as the canon progresses and as the stories become deeper. You learn that it's actually a much more matriarchal society than we understood. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's almost kind of like these two separate but kind of not, I wouldn't say equal, but very powerful genders within Klingon. So I think, you know, that Star Trek can, and sci-fi, I think that's what's great about it, is that as it progresses, you can kind of change the canon to be like, oh, well, we just didn't know about Klingons. Well, look at this whole other thing. And that's what's kind of great about sci-fi, is that it can constantly change and become progressive. And I'm hopeful with the upcoming series. You know, the new Star Trek TV show, they've said they have confirmed that they're going to have one LGBT character on it. So, I mean, I don't know how progressive people think that is now. It seems like, okay, well, we hope there's something else. But we know at least that the first commanding officer is going to be some kind of woman of color.
Okay.
So it's exciting, but when I think of progressivism, I'm really hoping that the show chooses to take on some writers of color, because so far right now the announced writers are all white males, which, you know, it would be nice to be able to move past that in order to bring in a more complex, I feel like, experience into the canon.
Yeah. And that's what's exciting about, you know, the progression of sci-fi and, you know, a variety of genres that we're looking into, is that the people that are making the content are the they themselves like outside of like cis male like whiteness. Mm-hmm. There are people that have, you know, a totally different experience from what, you know, had sort of originally like populated the canon. Exactly. And so right. like being able that's the critical piece, I think, for us to continue being progressive, for sci-fi to continue being innovative in this way, is yeah. that we have like a totally different set of perspectives.
Yeah, at the creator level.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to talk about the creator level, I just was reading an article, was an open letter to Tim Burton. And oh, so, you know, yeah. with the new movie that just came out, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, and how they were a little bit disappointed and how none of the children were actually persons of color, and so all the children are white, and the Miss Peregrine is white, and the villain is Samuel Jackson. And so it was just kind of like, oh, hi, we're trying to talk about the stories of these kids with these abilities and, you know, trying to find a safe haven, and yet their fear or their, you know, what they're afraid of is someone of color, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's just, it is problematic. And it's hard because I enjoy a lot of Tim Burton's works, you know, and I see that as that's kind of like a crutch for him to be putting that out there and not being aware of, you know, there's so many things that he can be addressing within this film mm-hmm. that he's not addressing.
What I find most problematic is when you have people like, you know, so he makes this and maybe he's just like not aware, you know, it's not obviously on his consciousness. Mm-hmm. But when people point it out, there's no like, oops, my bad. There's just a defensive response. That's what bothered me the most. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh.
Yeah. This is just what I did.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And it's like, he could have used this opportunity to say like, oh, I didn't even realize that, you know, my next film can be this. Thank you so much for pointing this out.
Yeah. Instead, or start a dialogue. Like, be open to that kind of criticism and also learn from it and then continue.
Yeah, because his response made me go like, oh, I'm not going to go see your film. Like, you know, even if your film is beautiful, I'm like, you can't even acknowledge what people are saying to you. Come on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would love to see, like, you know, positive, like, you know, heroic characters who are incorporeal, who are more like they don't exist on that gender binary at all, who are no longer like just the villains, because mm-hmm. that's always the case, right? Yeah. Like, you know, people who exist, or not even people, but like species that exist outside of bodies are typically the ones that are like, they're bad. They're trying to eat our energies and souls. Mm-hmm. And things. Yeah, exactly. Like, no, come on. Can we just have, like, you know, like a blob be a hero for once?
Yeah.
Seriously. Like, what kind of interesting, like, discussions could we have on, you know, mobility mm-hmm. and how, like, you know, how does that species cope with it? Mm-hmm. I feel like we have a lot of room for growth in this. So,
And it's all going to be on Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Coming to you. Becky's exploration of the formless blob hero society.
I would totally watch it.
Oh, all right. Woo-hoo.
Can I have Christian Slater, though?
As long as...
He could be the voice. He'll be the voice of the human blob.
Cool. Okay, we can work it out. Yeah.
Not his, you know, physical
That's
presence.
That's the new formula. You always have to have a star from the 80s on your Netflix show.
Oh, man.
So we should tell people the number again so they can...
Yeah, so if you want to call and give your thoughts in the last kind of few minutes here, it's 503-231-8187. And as we're getting ready to kind of wrap up, I wanted to talk about some upcoming things that we're going to be attending. Also our next month's show is going to be on conventions.
That's right. We have a special correspondent reporter who is on their way right now
to Geek Girl Con. Are you guys aware of this con? It's up in Washington, in the beautiful state of Washington.
The wilds of Washington.
So far away from here.
But yeah, we're going to be discussing conventions, and so a couple upcoming events that I know are going to be fun include the Geek Girl Con. That's this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Have fun, Rob. It's going to be cool.
Have fun. Yay! But also there's Komori Con at the end of the month at the Oregon Convention Center.
I have opinions about that.
Yeah. Oh. We can go and
we
maybe
talk about
anime.
That or-
I'm just saying, why do they gotta have the body pillow things? It freaks me out.
okay.
Okay.
That's real. Yeah, like, come on. Yeah. Body pillow thing. Ew.
And other events that are coming up. What other stuff we got going on, Becky?
Well, we have HB Lovecraft Film Festival this weekend in the Hollywood District with Hollywood Theater and stuff. I have a friend, hey, Jesse, who's going to be there. But I think that will be cool. It's been running for a few years. Mm-hmm.
Info at Hollywood Theater. That's with R-E at the end, .org.
Oh, yeah. Theatre.
Theatre.org.
We also have Nerd Camp coming up October 21st and 23rd at the Analog Cafe. And you can get all sorts of information if you go to analogpdx.com or if you look up Nerd Camp on Facebook. It's cool. There are all sorts of cool experimental games. They'll have panels. And basically, you just get to hang out with your nerd friends. Mm-hmm. Friends that you don't know that you have yet, but you will meet there. Because I think it's even like a speed friending thing.
Woohoo!
That's cool. I can't wait to get into that and be like, yeah, we can be friends, I guess. Just really quickly.
Move on.
All right. So I have like one trivia question they have to get right. Like, no, you don't know. Mm-hmm. No.
You don't know about the progressive blob.
Right. We come on, the progressive blob. Oh, hey, guess what? We have a friend.
We have a friend on the line?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes, we do.
Oh, hello.
Hello. And who are we talking with?
How's it going, everybody?
I believe this is Rob from the bus on his way to Geek Girl Con.
That is correct. I am on the Bolt bus, safely on my way up to Seattle for Geek Girl Con this weekend. Should be a blast. There's an opening party this evening, which I am quite stoked about.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
And I'm going to be capturing the finest audio possible to document the experience and report back for our next show on conventions.
Yes. Awesome. And also, we were talking about upcoming events, Rob, and OMSI After Dark is happening at the end of this month, and you kind of know a little bit about that. Why don't you give us some details real quick?
Oh, yeah. OMSI After Dark. So, I'm a huge fan of the series in general. But once a year, naturally, we get the special treat of having a Halloween After Dark. And for the last 2 years in a row, and going on into this year, I generally design a large live-action game for the event. So I'll be doing that again. And this year's game will be centered around the theme of witches and witches brew. So you'll be figuring out a few puzzles, meeting a few spooky creatures around the museum, and inevitably assembling some sort of magical potion of sorts.
Cool. And the date on that is October 26th. Is that right?
Yes, I believe so. It's the Wednesday before Halloween.
Okay. Awesome. Woohoo. Well, safe travels on the Geek Girl Con. And are you interested in anything in particular when you're there this weekend?
They have a number of panels. And one of the panels in particular looked rather interesting. It's a panel that explores the relationship between geek culture and kink culture. Yep, you heard that right. Geeks. Hmm. And kinks.
That seems to always go together. I love that. I love it.
Awesome. Well, best of luck, my friend, and we'll catch you on your pieces.
When you get back.
For next month.
Yay. Sounds
great. Thanks, everyone.
Rob, you're the best. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Yay. We've got on the road reporting. I think that's really great.
I know. Look, on our second episode.
For the third episode. So stay tuned for moving on, starting at noon. But I want to thank everyone in the studio, David, Becky, and Jenna, for joining me here and talking about the progressive movement.
Thank you.
And for all of you listeners out there, we love you. Please go on to our Facebook page, like us, facebook.com/Radio Geekly. Go on to our Twitter feed at Radio Geekly, capital R, capital G, mm-hmm. and email your thoughts, radiogeekly@kboo.fm. And we will catch you next month, first Fridays from 11 to noon. So take care, everyone, and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks for joining us.
Happy binging.
Yeah.